Welcome. The League of Women Voters of Washington Education Fund, along with our partners, including the Spokesman Review and local leagues, are pleased to present to you the candidates for our statewide offices. I am Lunell Haught, president of the League of Women Voters of Washington and the League's Education Fund. Ever since the founding of the League 100 years ago, a significant part of our mission has been to provide voter education. This program is an opportunity for the candidates to present their views and positions on the office they are running for so that you, the voter, can make the most informed decision when you mark your ballot. The League and the Spokesman Review are sponsoring debates and forums around the state. We have gathered questions from many locales with the help of our co-sponsors. You can find up-to-date information on our website, lwvwa.org. The League also sponsors an online voters pamphlet with candidate and issue information at vote411.org. We are working with TVW and our other media co-sponsors to extend the reach of these forums throughout the state. Additional viewing information is available at tvw.org. Most importantly, in order to vote, you must be registered to vote. You can do that online with the Secretary of State or at an elections office near you. Our vote411.org website has more information. And now, to get to the candidates, here is our moderator who will briefly explain the process.
On behalf of the League of Women Voters of Washington Education Fund, the League of Women Voters of the Tecoma Pierce League, County League, and the Spokesman Review, welcome to the Washington State Lieutenant Governor's Primary Election Forum. We have 10 candidates who are able to attend this evening, and so that means this will be an information-packed forum. If you have questions for the candidate, when we go to gallery view, you'll see a number, and you can text your question to that. Candidates will have 1 minute to answer the questions, and I will be inviting candidates to answer in alphabetical order, and after that, modifying the order so that no one candidate is likely to have the first response more than once. Candidates are also given the opportunity to challenge another candidate by asking them a question limited to 30 seconds. And the challenged candidate then gets 30 seconds to respond. At the end of the time for questions, any candidate who does not use their 30-second challenge will get a final 30 seconds to speak. Our timekeeper has an electronic clock to keep track of all of this, although I may have to interrupt a candidate if who goes over their time. And with that, we are going to get started tonight. So our first question will go to Joseph Brumbles to start. As Lieutenant Governor, you would take over in case of illness or absence of the governor. What are the responsibilities of your office the rest of the time? What are your priorities for the term? And what, in your experience, makes you the right person for this job? 1 minute.
Thank you so much. So a lot to cover in 1 minute, so I'll be kind of brief. My experience, I've been a business leader and manager for over 14 years, most recently managing a business with 91 employees and $38 million per year in revenue. I'm a single father. That's what made me politically active. We need to reform our, which leads me into one of my focuses. We need to reform our family court system. We need to address homelessness. We need to focus on clean and affordable energy. Family court reform, I said, school reform. We need to reform our schools to a more local level. We need to lower taxes and create, you know, reduce size of government and increase the quality of life for all. And the reason why I'm an interesting candidate is because I truly stand for everyone. I am standing up to be and replace any fake representation. We have a lot of people in Olympia who are not what they claim to be. I will bring accountability back to Olympia, and I am standing for a united Washington.
Thank you. Okay, next we'll hear from Ann Davison-Sattler.
Thank you. I'm Ann Davison-Sattler. Thank you for spending some of your time this evening listening to all of us. I'm a Seattle mom. I have two elementary age kids, a son and a daughter. So I've went through the trenches in this remote learning time period that we're in the midst of. I've been a lawyer since 2005. I became politically active because of my kids, because of the questions they've asked me about what they've observed along the roadways of Seattle, their hometown, with people clearly in need. It is time that we get regular people, everyday people involved with government. We need to have our first female lieutenant governor in the history of our state. I, as an attorney, an arbitrator, and mediator, I negotiate quite differently than my other colleagues would negotiate. I've dealt with professional sports. I've been in the front office of the Seattle Supersonics. I've dealt with egos, and I've worked in a refugee camp on the border of Cambodia with refugees who are voiceless. We need to have everyday people civically engaged, something new, fresh perspectives as we exit COVID-19. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Denny Heck.
Thank you, Kim. So constitutionally, the Lieutenant Governor is the President of the Senate. They break ties, they make parliamentary rulings. What is required is a rock hard commitment to fairness and civility. I have hundreds of hours of presiding over the State House, which uses the same rule book, and the US House for that matter. Secondly, other duties as assigned by law. The Lieutenant Governor is the chair of the Legislative Committee on Economic Development and International Relations. My private sector experience led me to co-found a company, which we built from 2 employees to 300. We're going to need to create more jobs going forward in our future. And we're going to need to create them in a way in which prosperity is more broadly shared, because we've suffered under unbelievable wage stagnation for the last 40 years. We can do better than we have. And the Committee on Economic Development and International Relations is a very good spot to provide leadership in that regard.
Thank you. Mr. Jared Frericks.
Well, roles and responsibilities of the job. A primary thing that I'm concerned about is the international relations situation, especially how it's been impacted by COVID-19 or the coronavirus. And so that's one of the roles or functions of the Lieutenant Governor is international relations, which is extremely important to a state of Washington where one of our one in out of five jobs deals with international trade. So making sure those relationships are good, stable, that we're getting along with our neighbors and that everything is everyone's doing well during this pandemic and that they're holding together. A little bit about myself. I grew up in Eastern Washington, and my goal since I've been 15 years old was to run for governor when I was 50. And so this is me working towards my apotheosis. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. All right, next, Michelle Jasmer, your turn.
Thank you, Anne, for the opportunity to be with you here today. The roles and the responsibilities of the Lieutenant Governor are to be there for managing the organization of the government. Key responsibilities are things that need to be done by a business leader. I am a person who has come to this position to be running for this office by being urged by legal professionals, financial professionals, and ethics professionals, and real estate and business people. They asked me to run the state of Washington because they wanted a business person to handle the business of the state of Washington. I have been a CEO, a president, a management consultant, a director, and I've held many responsibilities in the state. That's what makes me qualified. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Now, Mark Olias.
Thanks, Kim, and thanks to Legal Women Voters for this opportunity, and congrats on the centennial of women's suffrage this year. I'm Mark Olias, a lifelong Washingtonian, state senator, and college professor running to be our next lieutenant governor. For those that don't know what the lieutenant governor does, the most important task is serving as our Senate president, as the only senator running for lieutenant governor. More than that, as someone with leadership experience, as majority floor leader, making change in the Senate, I'm uniquely positioned to take on this task. And I don't have to tell you about what a difficult moment we face. This is a time for bold, transformational change for our state. We need an economy that works for everyone. We need universal access to healthcare, and we have to build on our cornerstone of education for all. Those are my priorities. Those are what I look forward to working on as your next lieutenant governor, and I'm honored to be here as a part of this forum.
Thank you. On to Marty McClendon.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for holding this forum. I appreciate it. I'm Marty McClendon. I'm running for lieutenant governor. The lieutenant governor's office, probably the most overlooked and underappreciated office, and yet very important. As many said, the presiding officer of the Senate, the governor when the governor's gone, the trade ambassador, but also a three-member board. Governor, lieutenant governor, and treasurer sit on the board for investment for the state's funds. It's important. Lieutenant governor, though, I bring 35 years of leadership experience across healthcare, real estate, ministry, and media. A broad background of bringing communities and people together to solve problems. The great thing about Lieutenant Governor, you can spend your time outside of sessions, working on issues collaboratively with the Senate and the House and the other statewide office holders to work on education reforms. We can open that up to the trades for the kids. Government accountability, so it's actually accountable to the people. Fighting for families, actually championing the idea that strong families make strong communities. And also, as well, working on the housing issue. We have a huge housing issue. I'll work on that for your Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
Thank you. Dick Meary.
Thank you. I think the question is, you know, what would be my priorities? And we all bring different skill sets to the governor's position. My number one, of course, priority always has been education. As a former school board member for 7 years and 6 years as the assistant ranking on the House Education Committee, I understand all the nuances of how public education and private education and homeschooling work in the state, and I want to work on those issues. Denny Heck will probably vouch for this. I am really passionate about all things electric, especially electric vehicles. I was the first recipient of the National City Captain of the Year Award from Plug-in America because of my work in promoting electric vehicles across the state of Washington and across the United States. And I think that's one of the solutions. I'm also a military veteran, 22 years, retired Lieutenant Colonel. I want to work on veterans issue. And with a degree in public health, I want to make sure we're prepared for the next pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you. And Bill Penor, your turn.
Well, thank you to the League of Women Voters for this forum. I'm happy to be here with the other candidates. I'm a lifelong resident of Washington State, born and raised. Raised my family here. This is a wonderful state, a lot of wonderful people. I've been in the aviation business for about 26 years now. And prior to that, I did a lot of blue collar work that was hard work. So I have a lot of respect for a hard-earned dollar. So that leads me to a lot of respect for our Washingtonians. In 2016, I ran for Lieutenant Governor. And I got to tell you, a lot of the same issues were present in 2016. Only now, a lot of those issues are not only the same, but they're worse. I, too, am big on education, wanting to move 10th, 11th, and 12th graders through to a progressive system to where they can have meaningful jobs and earn a good living.
Thank you. And we haven't forgotten you, Matt Seymour.
Hello, my name is Matt Seymour, and I'm running for Lieutenant Governor because I want to see fair play in Washington. I was born in the state. I'm here, been here my whole life, attended University of Washington. It's my home. One of my valuable assets that I bring to the position is I'm kind of a diplomat bridge builder between opposing views. And I want to bring that to the Senate where we can take ideas and issues and combine aspects of both, you know, liberal and conservative viewpoints into solving our issues on a more global scale that's going to affect everybody. I think it's very important as opposed to being very close-minded that many involved have been. I've volunteered in environmental education. That's very important as an educator. I'm a business person. I've run businesses for several companies, and I'm here to serve you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. All right, now that you've gotten to know the candidates, we'll get into some of the issues. Mr. Heck, you'll get the first chance at this one. As chair of the Senate and the Senate Rules Committee, what would you do to reduce polarization between the political parties within the Senate?
Thank you. And there's probably nobody in a better position to turn the temperature down on polarization and hyperbolic rhetoric than the presiding officer of the Senate. The truth is you have to bring to this job a firm commitment to civility and fairness. The truth is that civic discourse in America has degraded very considerably over the past decade as we have become more and more polarized. And frankly, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for the development of public policy. It's not good for inspiring young people to want to actually someday be a part of their government, let alone vote. So it has to be the highest value that the presiding officer of the Senate brings. It is what I brought when I presided over the State House so many, many times, and the U.S. House, as a matter of fact.
Thank you. Mr. Frericks, I'll let you start second.
Thank you, Kim. Yes, as president of the Senate, the lieutenant governor has an essential or a critical job to ensure that there is harmony with the flow of business within the Senate. And no other candidate can offer a perspective like a Libertarian candidate. A lot of the loggerhead or bottlenecks that appear within Olympia are due to the fact of the power struggle between the Democrat and Republican Party. And so it's about time someone kind of came in as a moderator between the parties and was able to say, all right, everybody, let's take a step back. Let's reevaluate our principles. Who are we here to serve? It's time for us to focus back again on our values as Washingtonians and start some recovery process. We, all of us, have been through some very stressful times, and we need to move towards recovery and rehabilitation to where we can start working towards the future. There's a lot of hope in store for us. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jasmer.
My education is leadership and development, leadership philosophy and management theories. And I'm likely the only candidate that has 3 degrees in leadership theory and management consulting and management development. In my undergraduate degree at the Evergreen State College, I was able to study business and sustainability. And these two things together are, they're not always together. And if we are able to see business through a sustainable way, then we can develop more business with a ability to be compassionate towards sustainable resources. And I have a master's degree in transformational leadership, and my doctorate is in leadership theory as well. And so I've done so much study and research on these topics that I know over 100 theories.
Thank you. Yeah, your minute is up. I thank you. All right, Mr. Leas.
I've had the privilege of serving as the majority floor leader, but I also had the opportunity of serving as the minority floor leader in the state Senate. So I know what it's like to be on both sides of the debate. When we took over the Senate majority in 2018, we changed our rules to ensure that there would be more open debate, more transparency, more opportunity for all perspectives to be heard on the Senate floor. And I think that's the cornerstone of ensuring civility and a good discussion of the issues. There are issues where we won't agree. As long as we can have a fair and open debate, ensure that the issues are well understood, then it's time to vote. And that's what I can commit to as the presiding officer. It's not about trying to move to the middle and find a lukewarm solution. It's about having an honest and vigorous debate of the issues, and then it's time to vote. And that is what I can commit to as our next Senate president.
All right. And then Mr. McClendon, you're seeing a trend with the M's here.
You are seeing the M's, yeah. Thank you. It's a great question. As the presiding officer, you do set the tone. And for, like I said, all my life, this is what I've done. It's called the golden rule, right? When you love people, they respond back to you. It's you love your neighbor as yourself. I've also been called the happy warrior by Jim Walsh. As a former pastor, as a realtor, and as adopting Stephen Covey's rule about putting the end, looking at the end first in mind and looking for win-win solutions, the idea there is we're going to be fair. We're going to be just. And I've got a history of bringing people that are opposing. They want different things, but we come to the middle and say, all right, it's not about compromise. It's about how we both win. You know, we want to have a vigorous debate, as Marco talked about. And the idea, though, is that you have to be able to trust the lieutenant governor to be fair in every ruling, and I will be. And I've had a history of it as well. So.
All right. And Mr. Murray?
Yeah, I think the big thing is to allow each caucus, the majority and the minority, to bring bills to the floor, whether they're going to pass or not. I spent 6 years in the House and never saw a bill that got defeated because the House majority Democrats wouldn't let a Republican bill come to the floor unless they really wanted to pass it too. And so I think really we should have bills that are going to fail come to the Senate floor. And I think that's a way we can take our votes and have them defeated and then move on. I think that, and keep it civil, just allow everybody to have their say, make sure that the motions aren't, there's not stall tactics by both sides to try to run out the clock, which I know is a game a lot of both sides play. So again, I'll try to keep it cordial, keep it fair, and be Mr. Congeniality. Thank you.
All right, and Mr. Pinor, your turn.
Well, as Lieutenant Governor, serving as the president, I intend to go out into the communities and try to get as much input as I possibly can. I'm running as a Republican. I respect our Constitution, but I also realize that after the voting's done, the Lieutenant Governor represents all Washingtonians. So bring those ideas back to the chamber, having a good, thorough conversation with people, being fair about it. You know, there are all kinds of good ideas out there. They just need to be extracted in a positive way. We have so much negativity in politics these days on both sides. It's not one or the other. And we need to bring that back so that people feel good about their government again.
All right. And Mr. Seymour.
Thank you very much. That's one of the benefits of being, not a diehard Democrat or not a diehard Republican, is I'm always on my own to try to balance the room. And that's a tremendous advantage in this position, because we have seen years of not fair play, where the party in power just does whatever they want and anyone else just doesn't have an opportunity. And I like the fact that many of us tonight have spoken up about that, being, hey, we want to see fair play. I can ensure it because I don't have a clique. I don't have a buddy system of my favorite people to favor. I'm going to offer fair balance, period.
Thank you. All right, and Mr. Rumbles.
Thank you. Yeah, as Lieutenant Governor, we have an obligation, the State Senate, all members of the State Senate, as well as Lieutenant Governor and executives and within government, everyone, right, that serves the people. We have an obligation to uphold our oaths of office and to actually serve the people that we represent, regardless of partisanship. So that's what I aim to do as Lieutenant Governor. And I aim to represent everyone, regardless of Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Independent. I will be everyone's representative. And because of that, I want to help to bridge the divide, the gap. And we can do that in the State Senate as well as Lieutenant Governor, especially by being consistent and fair, providing extreme transparency, and being inviting and inclusive. And so I would do that as Lieutenant Governor and make sure that consistently we are, fighting for the people instead of for, some people's best interests and special interests' best interests. So it's, enough is enough. We need to stand up and take our gloves off. We need to work together. No more left and right, no more divide and conquer. And that's what I would drive as Lieutenant Governor. But at the same time, I would always uphold the Constitution.
Thank you. And finally, Ms. Davison-Sattler, your turn.
Yes. This is an excellent question from me because it's really personal. I ran for Seattle City Council in a nonpartisan race this past year, November 2019, and got 40% of the vote. But what I experienced as a historic Democrat voter was being shut out because of the approaches I wanted to see, which was requiring there to be measurable outcomes and being good stewards of our tax dollars, and that the approaches we were working on, homelessness and addiction, were not working. Because of that, because of the intolerance and the closed-mindedness that I experienced, I did a party switch and I'm running as a Republican. So I have been on both sides of the aisle and I see the dire need that we must have. I want my children and their generation to see people solve problems together. People that come from it at different perspectives, different approaches from around our state, and actually get results for Washington. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. The third of our questions, we'll start with Ms. Jasmer. This starts, democracy depends on an open and transparent government. How can Senate processes be made more transparent so that voters will know what their representatives are doing on their behalf? For example, what rules would you propose to be enacted, repealed, or amended?
Well, as a licensee of the Department of Financial Institutions, something that I've had the opportunity to do in Washington State is take ethics classes every year since 2007. And I have seen the ethics classes change in form from very conversational and talking about issues to studying the details and the precepts of law. But ethics is something that people have and they don't have. And there's a saying that says, what is crooked cannot be made straight. Sometimes people that are not ethical need to be called out. And I have no problem doing that. I don't owe anybody anything. I haven't accepted big dollars from individuals and entities for my campaign. I don't owe anybody. That's what makes me unique in this campaign. And I believe the ethics and finding ethical people to continue to head up departments and to reward that is good.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting. Mr. Lias, your turn.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think transparency is one of the most important things in state government. We have to make sure that the people know what we're doing and that they have the opportunity to give feedback. I was one of the members of the Senate who voluntarily began submitting and replying to public records requests before we were ordered to by the Supreme Court. I also have led the charge in opening up our Senate rules to ensure more transparency in discussions of the budget and debate over bills. The other piece of this that I think is critically important, though, is to acknowledge that not everyone has a seat at the table. And I believe that our Senate rules should require an equity and social justice analysis of the budget and the bills that we're considering in the process. Too many Washingtonians have been left out due to generations of systemic oppression and racism. It is time to break down those barriers, break down those systems of oppression, and ensure that equity and social justice are at the center of our work.
All right, Mr. McClendon.
Yeah, this is a big deal as well. I mean, I know most of the Senate and the House at the one point in time fought against the public records request for because it was too much work. We need to have transparency with the work we do, whether it be negotiations, but in the Senate particularly, you know, we need to address title-only bills. So we're not addressing adding amendments to it after the cutoff time. We need to address what Marco said as well about the budget cycle, allowing more people to be involved in it versus a select handful. And honestly, the Senate's been talking about this for a while, but we really need to look at a remote testimony for those that can't make it to Olympia to give testimony and get feedback. And also, we have to look at the fact that meeting at 2 o'clock in the morning is probably not conducive to having transparencies. We need to watch where we're meeting and voting on things. So as Lieutenant Governor, I lead that charge to be more transparent.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Murray.
I think I have a lot of people repeat what a lot of people said. Transparency is the name of the game. I actually was one of the few House members that voted against that attempt by the House and Senate to exempt themselves from the public records request law that everybody else has to follow. And so I was one of, I think, only 16 out of 98 that voted no on that bill. If it's possible, I think everything that the Lieutenant Governor does and the Senate does should be open to the public, and including all the emails, once they're fully vetted, to make sure that no HIPAA or other private information is sent out. But we should be completely transparent from the get-go, and an open government is a good government. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Pinor?
Yep. Well, as Lieutenant Governor, you're second in charge of the state, and you deal with a lot of financial issues on behalf of the constituents in Washington State. They have a right to know where their money's going and how it's being spent. We have the highest taxation that we've ever had. We need a lot more transparency there where all of that money is going. The other thing is that, I too disagree with no title bills. I don't think they are proper. And I would work to discourage those heavily. I'm not in favor of those at all. But the other thing is setting the tone as the Lieutenant Governor and leading on that transparency. Things should be open. Things should be, obviously we need more transparency within our state government to share information so that people can make good decisions.
Thank you. Mr. Seymour.
Yes, transparency is very important, and access is important. You know, we can have video cameras, we can amend some rules, pero traducir las cosas en español. I'm fluent in Spanish as well, which is a large portion of our state speaks Spanish. Title-only bills, I will not reject those. They have to be complete bills. We have to know what we're doing. We can't hide stuff and submit it later. That's just all wrong. So it's leadership, transparency, it's being honest, upfront and forward, making sure the bills are clean without extra things added that don't pertain to the topic in hand. It's staying on topic. And I think we can do that.
All right. And Mr. Brumbles.
So I think it's a very important topic. We need to bring accountability back to Olympia, as I stated. I think part of that is we need to ensure, as Lieutenant Governor, I'd help to ensure that we do not lock the public out of sessions. They need to be able to be there in order to know what's going on and for accountability. Accountability is key. No more 2 a.m. sessions, as was mentioned. Ghost bills, we have to get rid of ghost bills. We must know what's in these bills before they're voted on, well in advance. I think we should hold more press conferences, not just the governor, but the lieutenant governor as well, to help inform folks and let people know what's going on a more one-on-one kind of basis. And I would do that in committees as well as audits. We need to audit completely, and we need full transparency. And that's how we get accountability, is from through transparency, through auditing, through holding people accountable via upholding different rules and creating awareness. So that's what I would do.
Thank you, Ms. Davison-Sattler.
I agree, like everyone else, that transparency is really one of the most important things for everyday people, to understand what the government, those we elect into office, are doing with our tax dollars. We need to require them to be doing what they would do, like it's your own family, like it's your own family's budget on the line. I'd like to see us partner with our great technology companies around our state and have access to as close to real-time use of our tax dollars and what our government departments are actually doing. I don't think it would be that difficult to implement, so we can actually see measurably where those goals are set. Are those departments reaching those goals on time and a quarterly basis? Right now, it's taking us over to 2 years sometimes to get that data. We need to have that more regularly for voters and constituents to know what they are doing with our tax dollars. It helps in transparency, it helps in accountability, and helps the government stay goal focused so we are getting the job done.
All right, and Mr. Heck.
Thank you. Sunshine's the best disinfectant. As a consequence, we should always err on the side of transparency. I second the remarks made by previous speakers about title-only bills, which is a practice that has gotten completely out of hand. But I cannot help but acknowledge that the greatest revolution in transparency for the legislature is the very network, TVW, on which this forum is being held, and of which I am the co-founder and first president. All current hearings, floor debates, past hearings are available online. The greatest revolution in transparency in our state's history, and for which I was deeply honored to be given the James Madison Open Government Award, their highest award for people who have contributed to transparency and open government in Washington State.
Thank you. And Mr. Fravericks, your turn.
Thank you, Kim. Transparency is something that requires candor. And this is something that sets me apart from all of the other candidates in this race, is my candor. If you look me up, you go to my campaign website, freedomfighter.shop, and look at my story, look at my autobiography, and look where I come from and who I am as an individual and as a person, and where I am on my journey of growth towards this goal that I've had for a long time, you'll see that I live my life with candor. And that's something that we want from an executive in Washington, is an individual who knows how to not only talk the talk or study something in a book or get a degree, but a candidate who knows how to actually walk the walk. And that's what I stand for. And that's my approach to this entire campaign, is a bottom-up revolution of state government and state agency. And that's what I represent. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, Mr. McClendon, you'll be first on this question. As chair of the Legislative Committee on Economic and International Relations, what policies would you propose for international trade, tourism, investment, and industrial development?
Obviously, a minute's not very long, but one thing, we have $13.5 billion worth of ag trade already. Growing up in Eastern Washington with a mom's family and farmers, dad's farmer, family with ranchers, I know how important that is to our state and to our economy. And they're hurting. They're hurting with the shutdown, they're hurting before that, and they need help. So obviously, as a proud advocate for the ag industry expanding, but also most of our trade and businesses that come in here need skilled labor. And we have a desperate need. There are 7.1 million jobs available in the trades nationwide. Massive need here. We need to actually promote that in our education system, do an education reform so our kids are exposed to the trades earlier on and they're aware, and then partner with private tech companies, nonprofits, and of course the trades to get them trained and certified so we can fill that job need.
And Mr. Murray.
Well, the lifeline of trade is transportation. We need to make sure our roads and railroads and our ports are functional and well-funded and operational. And we had to make sure that our labor, the longshoremen, never ever do what they did a few years ago. And that's going to basically a slowdown, a strike, which affected our agriculture really badly. We have to have surety in trade that our products are going to get to the market, and that the market stuff coming is also going the other way. Finishing up of 167 is really important, and also the Interstate 5. I was happy to work with Senator Elias on the transportation package that would pass. And so I'm really into making sure we have a very well-functioning transportation system.
All right. Next, Mr. Pinar.
Yeah, I agree. The transportation system, especially here in Puget Sound, needs to be corrected so that we have better transport mobility options for our freight and goods and services for these companies. The other thing that I believe we need to guard against is taxation against companies. Unnecessary taxation drives businesses away. The other thing that I'm interested in is this new agreement with Canada and Mexico. I think there are some interesting opportunities there to bring business into Washington State, manufacturing opportunities. The other thing, this is a multifaceted situation. Again, education, bringing our 10th, 11th, and 12th graders through into wage-paying jobs that they can live on and that will help business and industry in Washington State.
All right. Mr. Seymour.
It is very important to maintain good relationships and to have trade and just relate with other countries, both ones that are close and ones that are far away. We have a tremendous position on the Pacific Rim to have trade with Asia. It's fantastic. We need to make sure that's healthy and vibrant. It's going to the shipyards and saying, what do you need to be successful? What are you missing? What do you need to be more streamlined? What can we do in government to help you with that? Our infrastructure needs to improve. We've spent a lot of our resources in building mass transit, which is a good thing, but we have neglected other aspects of our transportation system. We need to assess everything and work towards it. Help our young people to progress and be ready for the workforce as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Brumbles, let's see how you answer this question.
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
I'm
at the end here, so
it's a good, perfect time.
Yeah.
Chair of the Legislative Committee on Economic and International Relations, what policies would you propose for international trade, tourism, investment, and industrial development?
Well, I think a big part of what we need to do, I mean, we're one of the highest taxing states in the country. We have the second highest tax gas in the country. And so on and so forth. So I think we need to reduce our taxes. We need to stop. We can do that by stopping waste. They lost $4.5 billion in our transportation funds, and they moved around 7% almost of our gas tax funds for other things. So I think we have a lot of opportunities there on accountability and on fixing that and reeling it back in, fixing our programs and lowering our taxes. Right. So I think that would help a lot to help improve relations with others and become more of a place for people to come and to see and to visit. As far as our transit systems, I believe in our transit systems, but I think that we shouldn't be all have to pay for the rail system in Seattle or Tacoma that's only going to mostly benefit those folks. I mean, unless we go to Seattle all the time, what have you, doesn't really help us. Yes, we can do it. We can work together on it, but I think that there's a lot of opportunities there. So as Lieutenant Governor, focus on those things.
Thank you. All right. And Ms. Davison-Sattler.
As a lawyer and someone who actually teaches international business law, this is something that I particularly, again, am personally interested in, making sure we focus on Washington industries and agriculture, making sure we remove barriers to trade for them, whether that means domestic or internationally. We need to have someone who's an advocate for small business who doesn't actually have the resources that maybe a larger business would have, the informational knowledge of how to trade their products. We need to make sure we are revitalizing trade. This is a paramount thing we must focus on, is revitalizing trade as we exit COVID-19. We need someone who is out there fighting for our industries and agriculture, who knows how to remove barriers, who is focused on making sure we get our products to the ports in an efficient, effective way that does not add cost to the process so that we get our Washington industries and agricultures back online and full steam ahead.
Thanks. Mr. Heck.
This is an issue in which I have some experience. I'm the co-chair of the Singapore Caucus in the United States House of Representatives. And in my role as a member of the Intelligence Committee, I have been on multiple sensitive national security-related diplomatic trips throughout the world. We have international opportunity here. For example, helping to market our shellfish, which are the envy of the world, we can do even better. But we also have domestic economic development priorities, like housing. We have an affordable housing crisis in this country. We need policies that incentivize more housing near transit, more density of affordable housing. We need policies that maximize the opportunity to take advantage of federal funds that are forthcoming. Lastly, we need to do way better at the issue of broadband and extending it to all areas. This is a fundamental social, economic, and racial justice issue. Broadband is the 21st century equivalent of electrification of the early 20th century. We need to get with this. It'll help grow our economy and prepare us to compete.
Thank you. And Mr. Fryericks.
Okay. Regarding international relations and international trade and economics, as a libertarian, I have a strong personal belief that free trade is the best trade. And so I would have encouraged strong and healthy trade relationships with our partners, both here and overseas. We have a lot of challenges down the road in Washington, especially regarding the environment, regarding our power usage and the dams, the impact of potentially removing the dams. How would we get a lot of our agricultural produce to the world if we don't have the lock system that exists on the Columbia River? So we have a lot of challenges ahead, and that's one of the things that I bring as a leader is that forward-looking perspective to answer those questions that maybe no one's thought about asking yet. So thank you, Kim.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Jasmer, your turn.
As an entrepreneur, my ears perked up when you said tourism. I believe that we can create more tourism in Washington State and create jobs and create opportunity. If we were to partner with the high schools, with career and technical education, and come up with some ideas of how to create more towns like Leavenworth, who doesn't love Leavenworth? If we had more themed towns, then we could create more tourism for Washington State. I believe that the kids are a source for these ideas. And career and technical education can help them learn how to create business models and come up with something that actually is profitable. If we bring people together, then we can do these things. I believe in creating something rather than looking for a model that already exists. We can blaze a path to the future.
Thank you. And Mr. Leas, you get the last chance at this question.
Well, thanks so much, Kim. I believe strongly we have to build an economy that works for everyone, not just the billionaires, the millionaires, and the special interests. And I have a track record in the Senate of delivering on that. I've taken on the big interests, Amazon, Microsoft, Boeing, and delivered. I helped pass the most progressive paid family and medical leave program in the country, closed an abusive big business tax loophole for international investment companies, and returned hundreds of millions of dollars to the state treasury. That's the kind of work we're going to need. We're going to need to turn our upside down tax system that penalizes working people and gives tax breaks to the rich right side up again. We're also going to have to invest from the middle out, supporting our small and medium-sized businesses. When I joined Lieutenant Governor Habib on a trade mission to the Paris Air Show last year, we brought small and medium-sized aerospace companies with us because they're the ones that need access to international markets and trade opportunities. Those are the values I'm going to use to make sure we're lifting everybody up.
All right. On to the next question. And Mr. Pinar, you get the first chance at this one. Major budget shortfalls are anticipated due to the COVID-19 epidemic. As Lieutenant Governor, what expenses would you encourage the legislature to reduce, and what revenues would you encourage the legislature to adopt?
Well, transportation is going to be one big obvious area to look. We spend an awful lot of money and there's an awful lot of investment. One of the things that I believe we need to get back to is zero-based budgeting. and build the budgets back up, and because we are going to have a significant shortfall in many different areas. So zero-based budgeting, you can build your budget up to see what direction everyone thinks you need to go in. The other thing is transportation systems. As you build, you've got to be able to support what you build. So having it up front, known what those maintenance costs and service costs on those new projects are going to be well after they've been built. That is a big area where we have a lot of investment that I think we need to trim down.
All right, Mr. Seymour.
Well, first of all, you have to define what is the role of government? What is truly the responsibility of the state of Washington? And in my opinion, that's things like infrastructure, education, and public spaces. Other things aren't that important or are not really fundamentally the responsibility of government. You know, we get involved with so many things that are not fundamentally the responsibility of government. And those are the things that would unfortunately need to be cut because it's not our responsibility. But we do have to fund fully the schools, education. We have to make sure our infrastructure is good and strong, roads, water, electricity, et cetera. That's how you do it. You prioritize.
All right. And Mr. Brumbles, how about you on this question?
I believe that government is a huge entity of waste, especially our current state government. I mean, they lost $1 billion, just on our unemployment situation or funds. As I said earlier, $4.5 billion shortfall on, the transportation systems. And then they moved almost 7% of our gas taxes around revenue for other things. So I think a big part of that, a big problem that we have is just lack of accountability back to before. Accountability, as Lieutenant Governor, I go in, I'd focus on, reducing waste through accountability, through audits, special committee to head this all up and to investigate. And to help to ensure that we adhere to our budget. We cannot go over our budget. We cannot have an inflated budget to where we're hurting the taxpayers and the people of Washington. So we do need a balance. And I think with that comes accountability and just, good old persistency, which I would be on top of. So.
All right. And Ms. Davison-Sattler, how about you?
Well, from our 2017 to 2019 budget, we saw an increase of almost 16% in spending when our population increase was about a 7 to 8% increase. So what we're seeing is a dramatic increase overall in just spending when we don't actually require measurable outcomes for those tax dollars. Again, I go to point to your own pocketbook. What are you required to do in the midst of COVID-19? We're having to watch our dollars, and that's a critical piece that government needs to take part of as well. So I want to make sure that we're really focused on having our dollars spent wisely. I'm not looking to raise any revenue because we need to make sure we have good stewards using our tax dollars that we've already entrusted them with. They've already increased the budget significantly. We need to make sure that it's used accurately, strategically, and meaningfully, not just calling something a large goal and not actually having steps to measure to get there to know that we're succeeding. So those tax dollars are used wisely for us.
All right. How about you, Mr. Heck?
There are four truths here. The first of which is we ought to always be looking for efficiencies, acutely so during a time like this, but it ought to be a matter of practice. Secondly, we can't cut our way to prosperity. We can talk all we want about protecting education and infrastructure, and we should, but you're going to get down to making hard choices about taking dental care away from poor children, and we cannot do that. We must protect the vulnerable. Thirdly, we're not going to get through this unless we have a robust partnership with the federal government. That's why I was such a strong supporter of the HEROES Act, which passed the House and had nearly $1 trillion in local and state government aid. Being Lieutenant Governor as a former member of Congress will put me in a position to help maximize that role going forward. And lastly, here's the hard truth. After we do all of these things, these efficiencies, the federal government and the like, we're likely to need more revenue. Several weeks ago, the governor said we're
all
6 points.
Well, maybe you can add that on in your 30 seconds. Mr. Freyricks, your turn.
Yes, everyone is very concerned about the budget shortfall. And this process actually is part of the reason that I am running for lieutenant governor. About 2 years ago, I was working for Adult Protective Services as an investigator investigating elder abuse for the Department of Social and Health Services. And so coming into this race, I am a frontline worker who has brought some issues into the executive suite. 2 years ago in APS, we were investigating to see if telework would be a reasonable solution. I think that COVID-19 has sort of answered that question for us. We can save a lot of money with a reorganization of our state agencies to find missing money or wasteful dollars. Now that we're not occupying huge, giant buildings, they're running electricity, air conditioning, and I don't know, maybe work towards reducing our impact on the environment and working more towards sustainability as a state government and setting the example for all business in Washington.
All right. Ms. Jasmer?
As a past business management individual and a management consultant and a business analyst, it was my job to fly all over the country and literally prepare people for the TV show Shark Tank. And consistently, people who went through our program won. And that was done by management, planning and doing company analyses and mandatory minimums, rate of overhead, and looking at absorption and capital management, and looking at short and long range goals. When you do all of these things, you can find holes of money that is siphoning out. And looking at the organization and doing analysis on that, and looking at controls, and simplifying accounting, simplifying systems, and simplifying installations, and looking at the cost reports and looking at the profit and loss statements for every little tiny thing. This is something that I'm very trained to do. And my my people won. And that was very fun.
But won. All right. Thank
you. We won.
Mr. Leas, it's your turn.
Well, I was proud to vote for a budget that left the most in reserves in our rainy day fund in state history and earned us the highest bond rating in state history. But none of us could have predicted the crisis we're in now. As we move forward, we've got to make some important decisions. First, we've got to turn that upside down tax system right side up. When a poor family in Washington earns $100, they pay $14 in taxes. When a billionaire in Washington earns $100, he pays $2 in taxes to state government. That's not right. We've got to turn that system upside down. That means progressive taxes, a capital gains tax on excise, on the big business and the billionaires that are making money off of their stocks and bonds. Also, we got to look at ending some of those abusive tax loopholes. I was proud to lead the effort this year to raise taxes on Boeing and ensure that they're contributing their fair share. And when it comes to cuts, we've got to end our policy of mass incarceration and return those dollars into the human services that will lead to better outcomes.
All right. And Mr. McClendon, you're next.
All right. With the minute, there's a lot of things to do. First of all, we have to hold spending. The idea here that when you're bleeding money, you have to hold spending, not spend any new more money. Number two, you have to get the businesses back going again, which means a business tax holiday for businesses so they can get back on their feet, hire an employee. That's where our tax revenues come in. It will roar back if we do. It's also renewable resources. We've got 14 million board feet of trees we grow every year, and we don't allow to cut less than a million. We could open that back up, which is a funding source we already have. Number three, we have the rainy day fund. Marco addressed it as well. We've diverted funds away from that before I even got there in a previous session. We can't do that. We have to put safeguards in place to protect the rainy day fund. We need to incentivize savings to find waste, fraud, and abuse. We know that. But also incentivize state agencies to find innovative ways to deliver service that costs less money. And then we do need to cut. But we need to clean up the departments first. Like the Employment Security Department shouldn't be losing $500 million to $1 billion. This is about leadership, and leadership comes in and brings solutions to provide a cleaner, more efficient way, less money. Sorry.
That's all right. Thank you.
Talking my tongue.
Mr. Meary.
Well, education is the paramount duty of the state budget. And so that needs to be protected, even though they probably can find some efficiencies, like reducing some of the ESDs and their sizes of them and the OSPI and their staffs and all the bureaucracy that is keeping a lot of the money from getting into the classroom. Mental health is number two in our priority. But after that, we should look for privatization opportunities. We should be combining agencies, eliminating some of these commissions we have. There's so many areas where I saw bill after bill, a million here, a couple million there, adding on to the size of government that probably yeah, probably can be reduced. It's nice to have, but it's not a priority.
You're listening to a forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters featuring candidates for Washington Lieutenant Governor. This is KSFC Spokane and KXJO St. Mary's, a service of Spokane Public Radio.
Well, we'll move on to another question, and some of you have touched on this. Mr. Brumbles on this one. Many people are at risk of losing their health insurance should they become unemployed due to the coronavirus. As Lieutenant Governor, what, if anything, would you suggest be done about this?
Well, I think there's a, you know, that's one of the things I think we should have in a committee. We should have a committee that kind of brainstorms this to include our state insurance commissioner. And, you know, I think that regardless of what happens with the whole coronavirus situation, if, you know, how it goes moving forward, we need to take care of the people. We need to come together. We need to, you know, regardless of partisanship, we need to put our heads together. We need to really strategize and plan on how we're going to incentivize people if they are out of work or if they lose their health insurance. And I know it can be done. You know, I don't think we have to raise taxes for that. I think we, again, we just have to be more resourceful and efficient on our current budget. And most important thing, we need to reopen our state economy. We have to reopen our state. We have to be safe about it, but we have to do it. And the sooner we do that, the easier it's going to be to, you know, get things going back to the right direction. So that's one thing I would focus on as Lieutenant Governor.
All right. Ms. Davison-Sattler.
A predecessor, before we even can talk about that, is we have to make sure we actually have adequate and accessible healthcare for people to get to. We looked at, in the midst of COVID-19, some of our rural hospitals and community clinics at risk of closing. So we need to make sure we actually have facilities for people to go to, first and foremost. We have our first responders who have been at the front lines. I want to say thank you if any of you are in the audience tonight, those of you in healthcare working for us, taking, you know, putting your families aside to go and be at risk yourselves, to care for us when we come in need of medical attention. I think there is things we can do. We need to talk and bring all the stakeholders to the table to talk about it. I don't necessarily think that it's a pivotal piece that Lieutenant Governor can have a lot of influence in, but it is something we need to be focused on. We need, again, make sure the tax dollars are used effectively and make sure we have access to the medical clinics around our state.
All right. How about you, Mr. Heck?
So the COVID-19 crisis has brought about and laid bare the inherent limitations of having an employer-based healthcare system. And that's why we must never, ever give up on our unequivocal pursuit and support of providing healthcare for everyone. We made a giant step forward in that regard week before last in the U.S. House of Representatives. I was proud to support the most significant expansion of the Affordable Care Act since its adoption, which would guarantee to people that they would not go without healthcare as a consequence of this crisis. But at the state level, it means making sure that we fully fund Medicaid, making sure we keep the exchanges healthy, making sure we follow through on our commitment to have a public option, because we cannot, should not, will not give up on our pursuit of having healthcare available in an affordable and a quality way for everybody in America. It's the right thing to do for those individuals, and it's the right thing to do for our country. It is an embarrassment that healthcare expenses are the leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States.
All right. And Mr. Frericks, we can still see you, so it's your turn.
As Lieutenant Governor, what I will initiate when I am elected into office is a long-range strategy to move Washington State towards a universal basic income so that a family will never, ever again have to worry about unemployment or pandemics or any of these kinds of crises that happen in order to access healthcare. What the Democrat and Republican parties have ignored for far, far too long is that healthcare is a human right. And without access to healthcare, many Americans, many Washingtonians are not able to access their other rights. And so Washington needs to be number one, and we need to lead the way and take extremely progressive measures in providing healthcare for all of our residents. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you. And Ms. Jasmer, your turn.
I believe we need to continue to move towards universal healthcare. With this COVID-19 crisis, we have to admit that we have seen an example of how we have come together. And I've noticed in watching the cultures of the different groups of people that have had big outbreaks, we have a culture in Washington where we have been, we call it the Seattle freeze. We are apart from each other a little bit more, and it's finally turned out to something that has been good. Our culture isn't to where we touch each other as much as they do in Italy. And so we've benefited. And in New York City, people are very close to each other, and we're not. So we've benefited from that, but we do need to move toward affordable healthcare and universal healthcare for all.
Thank you. And Mr. Elias, it'll be your turn now.
Well, thank you. As our Senate Majority Floor Leader, I've worked real hard to bring down the cost of drugs by passing insulin reforms and also to pass the most sweeping prescription drug transparency law in the nation here in Washington. We also led the way with Cascade Care, the first state-level public option in the country. But that's not good enough. We need universal health care for everybody. That means something like Medicare for All at the national level. And until that happens, I support and have endorsed the whole Washington initiative to bring us single-payer health care here at the state level. It's time for bold, transformational change. I've been doing it in the Senate. I'm ready to do it as Lieutenant Governor.
Mr. McClendon.
This is very personal to me, but serving 13 years as an anesthesia tech in open heart surgery. When I first started, an open heart surgery was about $50,000. Through regulations and red tape and the reimbursements, by the time I was done 13 years later, it was $500,000. It went up tenfold the cost of it, and mostly because they were trying to make a living and trying to provide the care to the patient. On the personal side, my son had leukemia twice, a bone marrow transplant. My wife had breast cancer and a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury. We've been in the health system. The bone marrow transplant alone was $6 million. So I understand the cost has gone through the roof. But adding more cost to it, it's twofold. I know we only have a minute. I'll make it quick. One is that when we drive the price of everything else up, it gives us less money left over to buy healthcare. And the best way to drive healthcare costs down is to increase the competition across state lines so we have more opportunity, better care, and cheaper costs. There we go.
Right. You did it. Thank you.
I did it.
In your minute. Mr. Murray, your turn.
Yeah, fully fund Medicaid, but really we have to look at the healthcare costs, which are driving up the cost of healthcare insurance, which are making everybody less affordable. We got to face it. You know, there's more available medical care. Seems like a lot of my peers are getting new knees, including my wife, who's got two new knees. How much does that cost? You know, it was paid for by our health insurance, but it's driving up the cost for everything. And we also need to look at more competition. We looked at tort reform in our state. I know tort reform is something that the Trial Lawyers Association doesn't want to hear about, but it's going to really reduce the cost. I know a lot of preventive medicine is done that's unnecessary, drives up the cost, but they do it to keep themselves out of court. Thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Pinor.
Well, and I agree. Medicaid is very important. We need to fully fund that, as well as our other constitutional obligations, such as education. But from there, I don't want to oversimplify it, but getting back to a zero-based budget and building all of our other budgets up to see where we are, where we can glean money so that we can then develop these programs that the less fortunate require. Medical coverage should be a right. I agree with that. But how to fund that? One of the great things about the Lieutenant Governor's office is it is what the office holder makes of it. And one of the things that I would propose is bringing together people in the insurance industry and the medical professions and any other group that has a play in that process to see how we can better serve for all people that don't have medical coverage that they deserve.
All right. And last on this question, Mr. Seymour.
I know that I went through a time and a period where I was unemployed or had very little income. And, you know, I have State of Washington, Amerigroup, Apple Health, long since expired because I'm doing it okay now. There is healthcare for those who need it. Is it sufficient? Is it enough? I don't know. I'm pretty healthy. I didn't need to go use it much, if ever. But I think the best thing we can do is to open up the borders and allow free market. These regional fences that we put up for health coverage is atrocious. It creates these little mini monopolies and it increases costs. If we have open competition for all the providers in the country to come here, we'll get better service for everybody at a much lower cost.
I want to let you know, Ms. Davidson-Sattler, you get the first try at this question. As Lieutenant Governor, what would you do to help our state reduce racial inequities?
We all know this is something that's really sensitive and important, and is unnecessary. It's sad that it has taken so long to come to the forefront and in the method that it came to the forefront. Someone who's worked with a lot of people, like I said, refugees and professional athletes all across the board. It doesn't matter their economic status, or where they are in the world. It matters that they're humans. And I think that we really need to make sure we are humanizing others on a daily basis. And that involves in representation as well. I think that we need to display this in a way that it is noticeable to our children. It is actually something that is palpable in the air, that we treat other humans differently than what we've been seeing. And this is within government as well. We need to make sure we are doing this. We have to make sure we say Black Lives Matter. They matter every day. We need to make sure that every human feels that they contribute to society and that they are valued. And that starts with us.
All right. Mr. Heckel, if you turn on your audio, you can answer this question.
Thank you. Black Lives Matter. George Floyd's life mattered. I'd like to think that he woke the nation. I'd like to think that we have an opportunity like we haven't had in about 50 or 60 years in this country. But it's not going to happen on its own. We're all going to have to put our shoulder to the wheel. As Dr. King said, change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability. This is everybody's responsibility. Racism is systemic, and it starts with, I think, police reform, why I'm such a proud co-sponsor of the Justice and Policing Act. But it's housing, it's healthcare, it's education. It's also structural. The average net worth of a Black family is $17,000 and a white family, $170,000. 44% of Black families own their own home. More than 70% of white families own their homes. And that's why I'm a proud co-sponsor of a somewhat controversial bill, but I don't think it's controversial. And that's the Reparations Commission. This is the gift that unfortunately keeps giving because of 400 years of accumulated racism. And we must attack it. We must take advantage of this opportunity that we have before us now.
Ms. Jasmer, that means you're next.
I believe that we need to be honest with ourselves. And I don't think we have been as a society and a culture. We need to look at some of the law enforcement issues that are very real. I am against Washington State having the charge of obstruction of justice. I think that if we really took a research project and looked at obstruction of justice and looked at the stories beneath that charge, that we would find a lot of stories in racism and injustice. I believe that police officers should wear body cameras 100% of the time. I think we need to move towards that. Also, in honesty, we've hired the bullies to be police officers, and we need to remove them from police forces because this is where racism is expressed. I also believe that police officers need to be taught emotional intelligence, primal leadership. Commanding leadership style works 10% of the time, according to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mr. Leas.
Thank you. I agree, Black Lives Matter, and we need to say their names. After Charlena Lyles was killed by Seattle police, I was proud to bring Initiative 940 to the Senate floor for a vote, but it didn't save Manny Ellis. We have so much more work to do in our state. I believe we have to demilitarize our police. I believe we also need to have body cams and accountability for all of our police. And it's time to look at the training requirements and who's ending up in law enforcement to begin with. I also think we got to go bigger than that. We've got to take on policies of mass incarceration. In our state, nearly 140,000 people are in prison, jail, or in custody. And that's four times the rate we see our neighbors in the north in Canada. We've got to tear down that system of oppression as well. We also have to talk about housing injustice, healthcare injustice, education injustice. It's part of why I really believe we need that race and social justice tool in all the decisions we make in the Senate, and it should be part of our Senate rules.
And Mr. McClendon, you have the next answer, please.
Wonderful. A minute is not long enough, but I'm passionate about this. My wife's Filipino. I have biracial kids. My best friend's Black. And I've spent the last 25 years in the inner city of Seattle, talking to pastors and neighbors, understanding that there's a huge problem. To Denny's point about the housing, in 1984, the Black community in Rainier Valley had the highest percentage of homeownership, the highest two-parent households, the highest graduation rate. 35 years later, with these policies that are in place right now, they're the lowest. It's a problem. And talking to the pastors there, they're mostly Democrat, by the way. We came to the idea, the way to solve this at the very root cause is parents and homes. We need to champion families, actually restore fathers to homes right now and not penalize them for staying there. This is something of working in the community, being with pastors, freeing them up to actually to reach out to their community. Too many times, big government, us government, gets in the way of nonprofits and churches doing their job. We should be partners with them and not enemies of them.
All right. And Mr. Murray.
Well, the biggest inequality is in education. And unfortunately, our public schools, we have some public schools systems, districts, mainly urban, who are not functioning very well. I remember one year we had half of our bills were about the Seattle School District, which is not doing well. And I won't speak for the other people that would tell me that's a dysfunctional school district and the outcomes are really poor. So how do we do that with the change in the new Blaine Amendment coming out? We need more charter schools and we need school vouchers for those kids who are in dysfunctional schools so that they can choose what school they go to. Just like we have a choice of what colleges we go to, our neighborhood schools shouldn't restrict us where we go to public school from K through 12. I know that's something that our fellow Democrats are gonna have a challenge with because of the teachers union, which is really the biggest impediment. Number one impediment to good education in our state is the Washington Education Association. I'll say that loudly and proudly. We need to get beyond that. Thanks.
All right, and Mr. Penor?
Well, this is one subject that is near and dear to me. And I'm as Lieutenant Governor, this is, race would be one of the paramount focuses of my attention. Both of my grandsons are African-American. And I have an extended family of Guamanians, Filipinos, daughter-in-law who's Peruvian. Every day we live, you know, it's a melting pot. And setting that tone and bringing people together on a state level and going after racial inequities has to be paramount for us to move forward together. The other thing is, again, as I mentioned before, the education system, in order to balance it out for kids across this state, we need to incorporate things so that the less fortunate can transition into wage-paying jobs where they can also have opportunities.
All right. And Mr. Seymour, your chance at this question.
This is a very difficult topic to talk about because my heart is very heavy. My very first best friend, back in kindergarten was a Black kid, a couple doors down that I walked to school with. And back when I lived in Skyway. I think that it's human nature to fear the unknown. And so the way you overcome racism is exposure, is having healthy interactions with this, unknown, whatever it may be, that it may become known, may become loved and understood. And that's not just us races, that's ideologies, that's everything. I think that some of our police policies have created problems that have, made things really, really ugly. And I wish I had more time to talk about the topic.
Thank you. And Mr. Brumbles, you get the last chance at this question.
Thank you. I don't think this should be a politically driven issue. I think this is a real and should be a very transparent problem that we deal with directly. I think a big part of that is folks that are driving the divide and conquer. I think we need to stop that. I think we set the tone, especially folks who are elected to represent us. So as a representative of the people, I would make sure that I don't help to drive that divide and conquer. So what holds people down? People of all races, right? Debt holds people down. So what puts people in more debt? More taxes. So we need to focus on our taxes. We need to focus on, especially our gas taxes. This is a great example, again, second highest in the country.
We also need to focus on our education system. I am a proponent of vouchers. I don't mind. You know, I think that's a great idea. Let people go to the schools they choose to. We need to focus on our technical programs. You know, I have a CDL, commercial driver's license. I'm probably the only one in this race that has one. That being said, it cost me $5,000 because I had to go and get paid to go to school to get it. In this state, you have to have a certain amount of hours. Let's fix things like that. Let's focus on the racial inequalities. As far as the police body cam.
Thank you. And I am looking at the clock and see that we have to get down to your last 30 seconds. And so with that, Ms. Jasmer, you have 30 seconds to touch on whatever topic you wish.
As a former career and technical education director, I believe that Washington State should move from high school seniors having to only have one career and technical education course to move to five. And this is done very easily because we are already taking a lot of electives and we change pottery to pre-healthcare courses, or we change woodshop to construction trades. It's very easily done. We have funding on a federal level with the Carl D. Perkins grant.
I have to cut you all off right at the time. Sorry. Mr. Leas, you're next. 30 seconds.
Well, thanks. I just want to address charter schools and vouchers. They aren't the answer. We need strong public schools. And I'm proud to be supported by the American Federation of Teachers. I think they're doing great work standing up for our classroom educators and college professors all throughout the state. I'm also proud to have the support of our outgoing Lieutenant Governor Cyrus Habib, the Washington Conservation Voters, the State Labor Council, and elected officials and community leaders all over the state. We'd be honored to have the support of our viewers tonight.
Thank you. And Mr. McClendon.
Running for Lieutenant Governor Marty McClendon. If you want someone that actually has a broad variety of experience, came from the Eastern Washington and over here now with healthcare, media, ministry, you name it, but also with something different. If you really think that the same party who's been in power for 35 years, the one that the problems have gotten worse, well, are the ones to fix it, then I'm not your candidate. But if you think you need a fresh voice, someone who has good ideas, who will be a leader and has been a leader for 35 years, then I'd appreciate your vote. God bless you.
Thank you. Mr. Murray?
I consider myself a compassionate conservative, but I am a conservative. I also am the most experienced candidate with both the school, local education experience, municipal experience, state legislative experience, and federal military experience. You take all those four corners and you put that together, and I have a lifetime of 45 years of service to my state and my country. And I think I can do a great job as your lieutenant governor and potentially your future governor if that was required to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Penor.
Well, thank you to the League of Women Voters for this forum, and thank you all for watching. I believe I bring some unique ideas to this office, and you can find out more about me at BillPenor.com in detail, and I look forward to your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Seymour.
Thank you very much for letting me be a part of this. I appreciate it. I know that I can bring fair play back to the state Senate, where we can learn cooperation, lead by example, and work toward positive solutions that will help the most citizens of the state of Washington as possible, and not just be, you know, doing what, you know, special interests is demanding. I'm here to serve. I'm here for everybody. I love everybody. I want us to come together and build unity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Brumbles, your turn.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting this. Thank you, everyone, for being on. We deserve positive and proactive change. We must, in regards to partisanship, we all deserve real representation. I am standing for a united Washington. I am standing to be everyone's representative, regardless of partisanship. That being said, we must take accountability back to Olympia, and I will go to Olympia and help to take our state back. We must liberate Washington State 2020 for all. And I am the most liberty-minded candidate in this race. Please check out more information at josephrumbles.com. It's like Rumbles would be at the beginning. I'm also very active on Facebook.
Thank you very much. Ms. Davison Sattler, your last remarks.
I think it is time we have our first female lieutenant governor in the history of our state. We talked about racial inequalities. We need to make sure we have representation for everyone, and that includes in this office. I want to let you know some people who have endorsed me in my first time running for state office. I have former Governor Dan Evans, former U.S. Senator and former Washington Attorney General Slade Gordon, former Secretary of State Sam Reed, and down in your area, Representative Wilcox, Senator Becker, Representative Barkas, Representative Gildon. And you can see more of my endorsements at Neighbors for Ann. It's ann.com. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you. And finally, Mr. Heck.
Thank you. The most important thing you can know about a candidate is what their values are. Here are mine. I believe in standing up, speaking out, and advocating on behalf of the vulnerable, and never, ever, ever giving up on the fight for social and economic and racial justice. Please visit my website, dennyheck.com. See the 250 current and former elected officials, including Governor Gregoire, Governor Locke, who have supported my candidacy, along with dozens and dozens of organizations. Thanks to the League of Women Voters, to the Spokesman Review, and of course, to TVW.
Thank you all. I wish I had a big applause meter for you all. You did a great job. It does it for our forum tonight. Hopefully you have, audience, you have all, this has helped you figure out who you want to vote for in our primary. Be sure you get your ballot postmarked or in a box by August 4th. And with that, I throw it off to, again, the state president for a few last remarks.
Thank you for informing yourself about the candidates. The League is proud to be nonpartisan, neither supporting nor opposing candidates or political parties at any level of government, always working on vital issues of concern to members and the public. Our main goal is to make democracy work. The State League sponsors the statewide candidate forums and debates, and our 20 local leagues, made up of 2,400 members, produce local election forums. This is the centennial year for both the League and the 19th Amendment, which recognized women's right to vote. It took more years for all women and men to actually secure the vote. Although our name contains the word women, the League is open to all men and women, 16 and older, and our purpose is to make sure voters understand issues and candidates. The League has two organizations, the education arm that presents candidate forums and debates across the state. It is our impartiality and our history as a trusted organization that gives us this privilege. The education arm, through the League's Vote 411 website, provides candidate information. It is different from the guide you receive from the Secretary of State's office because it is the only resource that covers every race in Washington. The League doesn't tell you how to vote, but it ensures you have enough information to be confident about your vote. The other is the advocacy arm that promotes public policy in Olympia through about a dozen volunteer lobbyists. We are grateful to our partner, the Spokesman Review, and our local co-sponsors who have joined us in soliciting questions from voters for these programs. You can get a copy of your vote at lwv.org. It has detailed information about elections, descriptions of elected official offices, what to listen for in a debate or forum, and elections that have been won or lost over a single vote. You can also access Vote 411 on lwv.org.